Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the December 1st meeting of the Morro Bay Planning Commission. Let the record reflect that Commissioner Luhr is absent, but we do have a quorum, and the meeting is called to order. We're going to start our meeting as usual with a moment of silence, please. Thank you very much. And if you'll all please stand and join us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you very much. This is a time set aside for Planning Commissioner announcements. Do we have any announcements this evening? Richard.
Yes, I would just like to mention a dear friend of mine that I met through Coast Alliance years ago when we were working on the seismic issue in on Diablo Canyon, and he had passed. His name is Ben Tierra, and we had a lovely memorial service for him, and I just wanted to throw a prayer out to all the family. He was a victim of gun violence, you know, and a beautiful memorial service was held with his family of friends. And I want to also thank Mark Tognazzini for feeding his family of friends that came over. It was very nice.
Thank you, Richard. Anyone else? Any other announcements? No. So, then moving on to the public comment period, this is a period that we have set aside for public comment not regarding items that are on the agenda tonight. So anyone who would like to speak on any issue, please come forward, give us your name, and we'd love to hear from you. Okay, seeing none, we will move on to, we have no presentation, so we'll move on to the consent calendar, which consists of the current and advanced planning processing list. Are there any comments, revisions, suggestions? Scott?
Just receiving file.
Very good. So do we have a motion to approve the consent calendar?
I'll make a motion to approve the consent calendar A1.
Second.
Okay. Moved and seconded. All any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 4-0. Moving briskly ahead to our public hearings, our first public hearing item this evening is item number B1, which is continued from our last meeting, involving CP0-460 and UP0-401, located at 485 Piney Way here in Morro Bay, and I believe that Cindy is going to educate us about this.
Thank you. Good evening, Chair Teft and members of the Planning Commission. This is as you said, public hearing for 485 Piney Way. Coastal development permit approval and conditional use permit approval. The request is by the applicant to install a new Verizon unmanned telecommunications facility. It would include a 3 directional panel antennas screened in a faux chimney on top of an existing church located at 485 Piney Way. On the screen is a vicinity map. This shows the church, which is bordered by South Street to the south, Shasta on the west, Anchor on the north, and Piney on the east. And this is a street view image that shows the portion of the church, and a portion of it is single-story, portion is two-story. The chimney would be proposed on the single-story portion, and I'll have some slides in just a bit that will give you a visual simulation of what that cell antenna facility will look like. So the proposal specifically is a request by Verizon to establish what's considered to be a small cell site antenna. Last week, the Planning Commission reviewed a proposal located at 800 Quintana with the description of the small cell site facilities. The primary purpose and goal of this project is to boost capacity in the Verizon network. It's specifically located in this residential neighborhood because of the dense population and the data congestion there, or data network. As I stated, it would be a new installation of three directional panel antennas with a wireless GPA antenna screened inside the faux chimney, which is proposed to mimic the existing chimney on the church. The chimney itself would... Sorry, I just said that. It would match the existing chimney on the church. In addition to the antenna on the roof, there would be also a proposal to include equipment cabinets and remote radio unit equipment facilities and meter, which would be installed at ground level on the west side of the building on Shasta Avenue. This is an overall site plan which shows the red arrows point toward where the antenna would be located. So this line right here denotes where the roof goes from one story to two story. So this is where the chimney would be, and then here you are looking at the red arrow on the left is pointing toward the ground-mounted equipment cabinets. This is a blow-up screen of the chimney and then the three antennas inside of the chimney, and then the small little dot there is the small GPS antenna. The image on your left illustrates the equipment cabinets and the meters, and you will see this a little bit more clearly illustrated when you see the visual simulations. So here's a visual simulation from the corner of South Street and Shasta, which shows the proposed Verizon Wireless faux chimney, and the chimney on the plans that you have in your packet. The chimney, although it would match the existing chimney, is proposed to be approximately 4 feet higher than the existing chimney. The dimensions of this chimney are approximately a little over 3 feet by a little over 6.5 feet in dimension. And then here are some additional visual simulations which show both the existing view. This is looking at South Street and proposed. And then, existing. Here you see on the left the existing chimney, and then the proposed will be taller. And then to illustrate the equipment cabinets, which would be ground-mounted, currently there is some lumber that is stacked along the west side of the church from Shasta, existing and proposed. So this shows the remote radio units and the equipment cabinets. So moving along, the south elevation, this shows you basically what you just saw in the visual simulations. Again, it's proposing the chimney and the existing chimney here. For purposes of illustration, you can see the taller height of that. And then the west elevations, the proposed faux chimney would not be any taller than the second-story ridgeline of the second-story portion of the church. This is a view on the west elevation looking east from Shasta Avenue. And again, the associated equipment cabinets and meters. As part of the requirements for these types of applications, a radio frequency report was submitted to the city dated September 23rd. And it was again actually revised on November 30th. The report evaluated the impact of the proposed facility on the surrounding area and included an existing Sprint facility. This is called out in your staff report. Although there's been no previous wireless applications at 485 Piney, there was an application that was approved in 2008 at a church located at 545 Shasta Avenue. This facility is not as strong of a data capacity as the Sprint facility, but that was a nearby wireless facility, and so staff asked the applicant to submit a revised RF report that was emailed to you today. We did receive it today. A copy of it was provided for you, and then if there are any members of the public, there is a copy over there on the table. And consistent with FCC requirements, the report did conclude that even with the nearby wireless facility on Shasta Avenue at 545, that the proposed installation at 485 Piney would be within the maximum limits as allowed by the FCC. As is standard with past Morro Bay projects, staff has added a condition of approval that a post-construction compliance report be added as a condition. The RF report also recommended providing training to authorized personnel and posting explanatory signs. Those have been added as conditions. I did prepare another slide just to highlight some of the conditions of approval that were unique to this project, just for purposes of clarity, to point out in the proposed resolution 4615, and the numbers on the left correspond with the conditions of approval. So condition one, staff is recommending be added, and the plans are ready to note this, that the chimney antenna would be screened to blend in with the existing chimney. Any of the cable runs would also be screened to blend in with the roofing. Condition number three is the condition to add the explanatory signage as recommended by the RF report, the post-construction RF report prior to final inspection and final clearance. Condition eight, provide evidence of RF training to authorized personnel. And condition number nine, provide limited access per the RF report. This condition number nine does call out, as recommended by the RF report, that it be limited no closer than 3 feet. And then condition number 10, as required by the city zoning code, ground-mounted mechanical equipment is proposed to be screened. And so staff has recommended adding a condition that would allow for the project to be compliant with this code requirement. And then condition number 11, and staff did get some correspondence from Commissioner Allure, who requested that, although he was unable to make it to the hearing tonight, that the Planning Commission impose a condition that would require a minimum of 72 hours of backup power, and that was already added as condition number 11. And so in reviewing the proposed project, staff evaluated, again, as stated last week, the hazards impacts as outlined in the RF report and then the visual simulations. With that, staff recommends that the Planning Commission conditionally approve the project by adopting Planning Commission Resolution 4615 for the site development plan dated January 29th. So with that, I'm available to answer any questions you have. Thanks.
Thank you, Cindy. Before we proceed with questions, I'm going to ask if any of the commissioners have received ex parte communications on this matter.
Yeah, I spoke with Reverend Paulson in the lobby before you.
Very, very well. So then, are there any questions for staff?
Cindy, on the RF study, the building to the west is multi-story. Do we know if we have the simulation to look at the highest possible level on that structure relative to zoning in terms of the study? In other words, we continually see these things show low levels, but they tend to be at the ground level. So we have a multi-story building there. This is a 27 feet. I'm pretty sure the buildable height across the street to the west is at a level with this structure. Do we have that simulation in the RF study, to your knowledge?
Yeah, they did. They do call out our RF exposure limits to surrounding second-story structures.
So I believe that would also have the capacity to have a third-floor deck at some point. I know it doesn't now. It's the same condition I was concerned about on Quintana before, where the trailer park was shown at 8%. But at some point, that's liable to be a two-story structure with a roof deck. And I'm concerned that all of our studies look like they're taking into account existing conditions instead of what potential conditions could be. Maybe that's getting into comments. But I'll...
Would you like me to respond or wait for
Certainly.
Comments? Okay. I'm not aware of what the existing height is on that. I do know that the zoning is zoned R1, and so it would be limited to 25 feet above average national grade. I don't know that it would be possible to get a third-story deck. That would be at the Valley High Apartments. At the end of the day, the RF report, if the levels are higher, the FCC dictates whether or not they can even turn on their facility. So they are required to show that they are within compliance with these requirements, and that's what they show in the RF report and then also what they show with the post-construction compliance report to show that these numbers are the same. I believe, and I don't have the number here. Oh, actually, this page is open right here. It does call out the represented on page 3, or sorry, not page 3, second to the last page on your revised RF report. It calls out that the second floor elevation exposure levels, specifically for that apartment building, would be 5.2%. I can't speak to a third floor deck because I don't know that that would even be possible with the zoning height limitations.
I'm just assuming that 25 feet means the rail on a deck would be at 25 feet. So a 5 or 6 foot tall person would actually be up around 30 feet. And so then you're looking at a horizontal signal transmission instead of a toward the ground transmission. Because I'm concerned that we authentically look at the impact of these things. That's, we can address that later.
Cindy, has the vendor considered getting an accurate study for alternative sites to address their issue here with the capacity? With the capacity issue, that's what we're putting these antennas for, right? Because of needing more capacity. I don't want to start making comments, but have they looked at other areas that would work in to address this issue, like not this specific area?
They have not submitted any alternative location sites to the city. We looked at 800 Quintana last week. This one's Piney. We actually have at least two more open applications. Two of them are coming to Planning Commission at the next meeting, and I would imagine that we would be seeing more applications. I think it's precisely these applications are being located where they are precisely because of the residential neighborhood, because the demands of cell phones, of smartphones, and the demands of tablets are more intense data-wise than what's considered feature phones or flip phones. And so as people are more and more buying this technology and consuming this technology, they're actually needing more of that capacity right in their area. But that was kind of a long answer. No, we haven't gotten alternative studies.
It may be that the applicant can address that question as well. Okay. Then with no further questions from the commission, we'd like to open this up to public comment. Traditionally, we afford the applicant or the applicant's representative a chance to speak first, and then we'll take any comments that there are.
Good evening. Tricia Knight representing Verizon Wireless this evening. So I'll answer some of your immediate questions. Cindy did a great job of summarizing why you're going to see more of these small cells closer to the users, and that's exactly the case, is that these are data-driven. And so they're in need to be closer to the users in order to get that data capacity. It's almost like a on-ramp or an off-ramp on a highway. And so we currently have, as she said, we had one with you last week. I have one with you now. The alternatives that we looked at here were utility poles in the immediate vicinity, but there wasn't enough ground space for the equipment, or there wasn't enough separation between the lines. There are certain requirements that the utilities have that we have to meet in order to locate antennas on their poles. But then we found other locations. There's one on Quintana. You're going to have a couple more coming next week. And so instead of these large monopines and things on the outskirts that really do give you the coverage that you need to make a call and hold a call, it's those data devices that we all have, and many people are using, you know, their phones and their laptops or their iPads as computers these days. They're doing a lot of their in-home office work. And so all of those issues are why you're going to start seeing these closer. One thing to make note of is just engineering and physics is that your phone, if you're closer to that antenna, that signal does not have to travel as far. So there's not as much power going from that antenna to your phone. So it's actually safer for them to be closer to you, believe it or not. That's why when they're further away, that strength signal is stronger. And so that's why you're going to see it's more, we have enough voice. I think everyone can hold a call for the most part. There's a few sketchy parts of Morro Bay that I still can't hold a call for very long. But it's those data speeds, and during emergency situations, these will also offset because those are going to become overwhelmed, the ones that we have on the outskirts of town. And then these will offload that capacity. We had, you know, obviously done this cumulative report for you after we had gotten a question regarding that from a neighbor. And as we talked last time, I think what we could do and what they are able to do is as they come out and do that reading, they would bring a crane out and bring it up to that potential third story level and take a reading there. So you can put as many points as you'd like to see after that facility is turned on to make sure that the power levels are within the FCC guidelines, and you're going to see they're a lot lower once that report is issued. But that's something that we can do, is add a condition for that. We had a letter from a neighbor that I think you had all gotten a copy of, from Marcia Larson. I'm not sure if she's here, but and I can go through those after the public has had a chance to speak if you'd like. I did submit some information on property values. I think you distributed that to the commission for you to look at as well. And then I'm here to answer any specific questions you have right now before public comment.
Yeah, why don't we hear from the rest of the
sure.
public? If you can stay with us,
we'll
reserve our questions to the end of
Sounds
the public
good.
Comment period. Okay, anyone else who would like to speak to this issue?
Good evening. My name is Richard Hopper. I own a home at 680 South Street, which is directly south across the street from the Presbyterian Church. And I got a notice of the public hearing, and subsequently have had some conversations with the folks at the planning department and with the applicant. And I just want to be sure that I understand some things and then share with you a thought or two. Cindy, would it be possible to put the plat up on the screen? That one.
My home is right here on the south side of the street, and my living room window looks directly across the top of the roof, across the one story, to the rock in the back bay and the sand, or not the back bay, the bay and the skip. And so that's why I'm concerned. And
my understanding is that this is to be a chimney. It's going to be about 3 feet higher than the existing chimney on the west end of the building, and it'll have three directional cell panels in it. I understand the need for that, and based on conversations with Tricia, the structure is apparently the building structure is apparently supportive or capable of supporting this new chimney and that kind of a thing. The question that I had of them was the location of this new chimney,
which is by the plan 18 feet back from the west wall. This is a wood burning fireplace serving a fire site down below. And this faux chimney was the 18. I had a conversation earlier this evening with Tricia Knight, and she made a phone call and per my request, and they now have said that they are able to move this another 12 feet, which would be 30 feet back from here, halfway between the two. And if they do that, because of the way the building is constructed with a two-story section and a one-story section, I believe that from my home that I won't see that chimney. And so I don't have any problem with them if they will commit to moving that back eastward along the ridge of the roof another 12 feet and leaving the structure, other than that, exactly the way it is. It would not be obtrusive to me at all.
Obviously, I'm concerned about property desirability and property values and those kinds of things. I understand that zoning ordinances and those kinds of things do not take view into consideration. I understand that. That's not a problem with me. I will tell you, I spent 45 years in the real estate appraisal business, and when I couple that with reading the Morro Bay paper, the Tribune, and look at all the ads, and they say 180-degree ocean view, view of the Rock, view of the Back Bay, view of the Spit, view does mean something. So even though the ordinance doesn't address it and can't, I guess, address it, I believe people can address it. And so I would request that you give some thought to that. I will tell you that because of my years in the business, I dealt with a lot of planning departments over the years. You have a good one. They talked to me. I went in unannounced without an appointment. They had time to talk to me. They talked to me on the phone. They emailed me documents. I will tell you that the applicant has been very responsive to my requests, and I am not going to file any kind of any formal protest to whether it would be proper to do so or not. With their agreement to move that chimney back another 12 feet, I'm a happy camper. So thank you very much.
Thank you, and we certainly agree with you about the planning department. Next.
Hi, I'm Ann Travers. I live at 595 Anchor Street. Cindy, could you go back one more to the community? Keep going there. No, that one. Yes. This is our house. This is the other cell tower. We understand that the FCC is the one that regulates cell towers. And we also understand that all of us have cell phones and we want the best service we can get. But we live one half block from one cell tower, and we will now have another cell tower in another one half block. And we're not the only neighbors that are going to have this. What discretion does Morro Bay have in location and placement of cell towers? When we dealt with this 5 or 6 years ago, when we were talking about the cell tower at St. Peter's, we understood that there were issues like co-location, neighborhoods, that could be included, putting cell towers on public buildings. But I really do have some issues about and some concerns about our neighborhood having more cell tower impact than any other neighborhood in Morro Bay. And I would ask that, at a minimum, this antenna be placed on the building, on the Piney Way side of the building, and not on the Shasta side of the building, so that at least we've got some leeway here. You know, I mean, we don't know what impact cell towers have because we've never had them before. And they've never been around long enough. But certainly our community needs to be treated as any other community in Morro Bay would be. All the other cell towers are in locations that are not residential or at least spread out among neighborhoods. This is a pretty concentrated issue. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Barbara Norton, and I also live at 595 Anchor Street. I want to know, can we put a cell tower on top of our house? Can we?
This is a time for public comment, and we're not going to have a dialogue.
That's my comment. I want to know if I can, if anybody in Morro Bay can put a cell tower on top of their house. Or is this just limited to churches?
Will we have a specific application before us right now? So we're going to deal with the specific application.
I'm in the crosshairs of two cell towers now. I don't understand why you're even considering this. There's already a cell tower right next door to us, and now there's going to be one across the street, catty corner from us. And I want to know what the rules are in Morro Bay. Can you put a cell tower any place you want? Or, as I understood it at one time, they weren't supposed to be in residential neighborhoods, but that went by the boards.
Well, we'll address your questions at the end of the public comment period.
You're not going to consider my question?
We will, but we'll address them at the end. We'll address all of the questions together at the end of the comment period. Anyone else that would like to speak at this time? Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the commission. Let's start out with asking if there are any questions for the applicant or the applicant's representative.
Thank you. Mr. Hopper had mentioned about the possibility of moving the cell tower 12 feet. Mm-hmm. Is Verizon willing to do that?
Absolutely. So what I did is, as the board meeting for the water board was getting out, we talked in the lobby over here, and I just went out and I just wanted to make sure from a construction standpoint that was something feasible, that there was enough structure below. And you can clearly see there's structural members every 12 feet for about for each 12-foot section. So, yes, it's absolutely not an issue. And then that removes the visibility that he was concerned about from there. Just wanted to make one comment about the Sprint facility I did that permitting in 2008, I believe. And the reason that we're not co-located there is and what you either the way you can get coverage and capacity is with large or small. And the large are usually for more for coverage, and the smaller are more for capacity. On top of that church, there's a cross that they removed the cross, put the antennas inside, put some screening around it, similar to what we're doing with the chimney. And so the only way more antennas could fit in that is if it gets a lot bigger, a lot fatter, and a lot taller. And so it gets out of scale and proportion. So when you see these smaller cells, idea is that you're trying to screen them and keep a low profile. And so that's why you don't see a lot of co-location in residential areas, large monopines or church steeples or anything of that nature. So I just wanted to sort of comment on that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions for the applicant?
Is it possible to get the coverage that you need? Like, let's say you moved up to like Ridgeway up by that water tank or someplace completely away. And can you get, my understanding is that you're going small because you don't have to be as strong, but there's a cumulative impact of the RF signal though. Is that correct? In other words, if you move away from the residential, you're going to have a bigger facility, but having a bigger facility not in a residential area,
it's twofold. So you'll see that a lot of the carriers are going to be doing now, and I believe the majority of your major facilities are a monopine over on Quintana at a church, some PG&E towers on the hillsides up above Hillcrest, and then off of the Myers property, I forget, but it's up on top of the hills. It overlooks. Those are basically your three large facilities. And then you've got some in the downtown commercial area, some T-Mobiles and stuff like that. But what you're seeing now is in the applications that I have in with the city right now are dotted all over. Now, what needs to happen for those to get you know, to the stage where we're at now with the project before you, we have to have a willing landlord. We have to have it to be able to be constructed. We have to make sure that it meets planning standards for screening. And then we have to make sure that the radio frequency engineers agree that that is, it's getting, if they're going to spend the money on that, that it's getting them what they need. And so all of that coming into play, it doesn't happen all the time. And so, you know, when we looked, so what happens is these smaller signals are going about a mile or so. And that's why we're going to have approximately five in and around Morro Bay that are going to do that job. And so not only when tourists are in town or people are using their cell phones and data tablets and things, but also during emergency services, because those facilities up there are going to become overwhelmed immediately. And so these are going to click on and help your immediate Morro Bay residents. And so that sort of Verizon's always been. That's why they're still sort of ahead of the pack. Not that they'll stay there forever, but they're always planning for that inevitability. It's not a matter of when that emergency happened. They know it's going to. And so, and along with the fact that they keep their customers because they give the customers what they ask for, which is to have consistent data. So I hope that answers your question. I might have gone a little too far there.
This is speculative. If you can help me, that'd be great. So how many major cell providers are there?
There are four now.
So if you think there's going to be five, does that mean we're going to get 20 in Morro Bay?
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
You said you're going to add five for Verizon. So does that mean we're going to get 20 in Morro Bay altogether from the four providers?
There may be. Small cells, I'll definitely tell you, are the next wave of technology because it's not voice. We can almost hold a call everywhere now. It's all that data. The carriers just can't keep up with it. They have problems with being able to keep up with the need, and they're losing customers here and trying to continue to build their network there. So it's definitely something that each jurisdiction is looking at, and Sydney and I have had conversations, and Joan and I have had conversations about sort of what I see. You know, I've worked for all the carriers and been living and working here for a long time doing this, and this new type of technology, it's less visible, which is nice. You don't have the large, huge antennas. You've got smaller facilities, easier to screen. So from a planning and construction standpoint, that's better. Like I was saying before, believe it or not, and we can get more conclusive evidence for you, the closer you are to that tower, the less signal strength you have coming to your device. It's actually safer. And so that's another thing, is that you don't have to have the strong, powerful signals anymore. Very weak. You're going to be very surprised when you see the as-built RF reports what those strength signals actually are. It's very low. And so that's another thing, is they can use much more simplistic equipment.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. One of our residents commented about if it was possible to move the tower from one side of the building to the other. And specifically, I guess, to the Piney side, Piney Way side, mm-hmm. Is that able to happen?
Well, Piney Way side is on the upper portion.
So
I
it
believe.
Would.
It's just going to be taller and more. We put it on the lower roof so that it has less visibility. That was just our sort of aesthetic bounce on that design. Was we didn't want to go on that upper roof because it would just be
worse.
Very big. Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
The one gentleman mentioned about moving that chimney. I went for a little bike ride there this morning, and those houses on what we're calling the west side or the south side there, mm-hmm. and it goes up. Mm-hmm. So if that tower gets moved closer and opens up the view for that mm-hmm. one gentleman, is it far enough over for the other people not to have an obstruction?
I believe so, yes. Okay. I don't think it's going to be because of the taller roof, yes.
Okay.
On the upper level, yes.
I have a couple of questions. Just
sure.
Just to follow up on the whole view issue, just looking at sheet A2, it looks like there's, within that chimney structure, it looks like there's quite a bit of room between the antennas.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a physical requirement? Was mm-hmm. that just done to make it look like the other chimney?
There is some dimension. There are some separation requirements between the corners of the antennas. And so, yes, there's usually a certain amount of distance for the mounting hardware inside of there, as well as the separation from corner to corner of each of the antennas. But the overall dimensions, and I did bring, I know it's taller, but I want to say, so we are 3 feet 3 inches in width by 6 feet 8 inches long.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so to, I believe we're mimicking the same size, but it's slightly taller of the existing chimney.
Right. But I guess what I'm asking is this the minimum size that that chimney could be made, or?
It's my understanding, if you would prefer to add a condition that we condense the separation of the antennas to the furthest extent technically feasible. Mm-hmm. I can verify that. That is my understanding historically, but I can see clearly on that A2 page that doesn't call out that distance. So I could definitely throw that back to the engineers and see if they can tighten that up.
Okay. Something for us to discuss.
Of course.
And the other question I had was regarding the revised RF figures. I noticed that, for example, let me get that figure in front of me here. For example, at the site of the apartment building, it went from, I think, my recollection is it was 3.2% of FAA maximum allowable previously went to 5.2.
Mm-hmm.
Do you recall what the existing what the level is from the Sprint antennas? Because that to me implies that there's quite a large component of that 5.2% is actually Sprint.
Back when 2008, we didn't do these sort of graphics that we do now, so I don't think the report that I forwarded you actually calls out, which is a predictable model. The reason for that jump from the previous report to this one is because it is cumulative. It's taking
right.
into effect both of those numbers. So there's no, I don't think, way to, and I can ask, but I don't think there's any way to figure out what percentage of each of those is contributing to that number.
Well, they must have had a number in this is calculated,
right?
Not
right.
measured. So they must have had a number that they used to derive that 5.2%. The point I'm making is it's not 2%. In other words, you can't just go 2% plus 3.2% is 5.2%. To get from 3.2% to 5.2%, you've probably got to be up around 4% someplace.
Right, right. I see what you're saying. Yes, but still compliant within the standards. Yes.
Right, but all I'm saying is that the existing environment there is much closer to the proposed environment than it would appear just from looking at the numbers.
Okay.
The change is significantly less than. If you just look
at the
percentages.
If you just were considering one, correct.
Because they don't add. It's
right.
a logarithmic.
There's a logarithmic, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think they have, in the figure two, in the back methodology, it shows how that is reached. And
mm-hmm.
I recognize pi, but that's about it. Wish I knew more.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions for the applicant? Okay, maybe then we could just take a minute and between staff and the commission address. I'm sorry, I lost the sheet that I'm writing on here. Address Ms. Norden's questions about what zones cell towers are allowed in.
Sorry, I'm just looking for a word. But anyway, antennas are allowed in any zone district, subject to obtaining a conditional use permit. So they can be in residential, commercial, industrial. And so it's this conditional use permit process that permits it to be on the church. So, and that's...
So that's, theoretically, then, a person could have one on their house if
theoretically,
Verizon approached them and said, we'd like to put an antenna
here. Yeah, theoretically, of course, as the applicant pointed out, there are some variables that need to all line into place before you actually have a contract with a wireless company and make some money off your house. So.
Right, right. Okay. So then let's bring it back for discussion. Who would like to start off? Let's pick on you tonight. Ladies first. Or beauty before age.
Either one. I'd like to thank the applicant for working so diligently with Mr. Hopper and coming up with a solution for your issues. I also note that on Anchor Street and the surrounding where they're going to have two cell towers, if we approve this one, that they will be getting it from two directions, and I do understand their concern. I also feel that in doing some research that section 704 that we really cannot deny a application because for RF exposure levels, as long as they are within acceptable
federal
limits
standards.
And federal standards. So, I live in that area too. I'm not within the 500 feet, but I do live there, and everybody does have this, similar concerns. It is relatively new science, and we have to go by the federal guidelines. That's my comment.
Okay. Michael?
Yeah, I understand and appreciate the federal guidelines. It doesn't mean I have to believe them. I feel very concerned when I hear we've got 4 antennas, 5 antennas, 20 antennas in our city. We control lots of things that are allowed in the city as to the density that they have. We have special districts set up for certain kinds of uses. I think this has just gotten ahead of our capacity to think about how we want to deal with it. When we see them come up piecemeal, we treat them piecemeal. But I'm concerned we're in a new level of technology here that, Mr. Evers and Ms. Norden are talking about the first of what's going to be numerous intersections of this technology overlay. And you combine that with the pulsing that our meters all have now, and, we're kind of awash in this. And I appreciate the simulations and that we have these ratings after we're done, but I really think that when you consider a pattern of these locations across the city, we're past the large ones, now we're into another grain of smaller ones, and I think it's a real concern that we're going to have residential citizens coming forward as this new level of grain shows up in the community. It was one thing when we were talking about putting it on the water tank in North Morro Bay or some of the poles by the fire station or things like that. But I'm concerned that even though the technology in theory is viable, I am concerned that the commission's job is not to determine the science. It's to take into account the community values as we apportion how much visual clutter we want to maintain in the city, how much I just think it's a concern of mine that we are looking at a piecemeal problem to something that has an infrastructural scope to it that I don't think we're seeing the ramifications of.
You said it a lot more eloquently than I could have, but that's exactly kind of what I'm seeing too, is this, this one-offs that go on. One of the things here that's happening is we're setting a precedent here on how close we have to facilities, okay, in a residential area. I really appreciate you taking the time and to try to address visual things, visual concerns from the community. And I I appreciate you educating us on the strength of the signal and how these things work. But I feel that this is an emerging issue that we need to have get a hold of. Now, regarding the FCC, you know, that science and that acceptable limits, you know, I can give you a little story. I worked in the aerospace industry, and we used to have these acceptable limits, what you could be exposed to. And one of them was hydrogen was acceptable, was 8 parts per million, but you can only smell 15. So by the time you smell it, you've already exceeded. And these are the kind of things that we have here, is we don't know where we're going. As far as what is safe for one person, what is safe. We have a lot of older people too, you know, that live around here. So I feel that we need to, you know, look at how a little bigger picture and how these things are going to integrate. I wish that there was like where we could see, okay, we got 15, 20 antennas we want to put in this area. And then we could kind of work at it that way. But working at it just one-offs like that, it might be difficult. But, yeah, that's a concern.
Well, I appreciate what Commissioner Sadowski and what Commissioner Lucas are saying. And I will absolutely grant the fact that this is emerging science. The United States has adopted one particular standard for RF radiation. Other countries have adopted standards which are much, much lower. There's a difference of methodology. Unfortunately, from what I understand, a number of the studies that are out there have been relatively poorly done and are difficult to lend credence to. But we are in a peculiar position here because the federal government has really preempted the area of radiation safety. This Planning Commission could not decide, or the City Council for that matter, could not decide to pass an ordinance saying that no airplane can fly lower than 15,000 feet over the city limits of Morro Bay. That has been preempted by the federal government. We couldn't pass an ordinance saying we'd like our stop signs to be blue instead of red. That's been preempted by the state. And unfortunately, federal law really constrains what we can do in terms of using RF limits as a criteria for denying or approving a project. We're specifically not allowed to consider the environmental effects, and that includes radiation levels, as long as they meet the federal guidelines. Now, certainly, we can consider the impact on the neighborhood, the visual impact. We can consider, you know, perhaps coming up with some sort of overall, you know, more comprehensive plan as to how these could be put in. But we really, you know, basically the federal government has said we're taking this out of your hands in terms of the radiation levels. So how are we feeling about this particular proposal? I do applaud the attempt to improve the visual impact by moving the chimney. I personally would like to include a condition that Verizon will work with staff to minimize the size of the chimney as much as possible. I think it's I think given, particularly given the fact that there's going to be a greater distance between the two chimneys, it's probably less of an impact to have it smaller than to have it being, it's already a different shape in that it's taller than the other chimney. And so I think maybe just minimizing the size of it would be the most appropriate visual approach.
I guess my concern is if we were going to go with a piece of the general plan that said we were going to allow cell facilities every half block, I don't think we'd get it passed. And that's the precedent we're setting here tonight, is that, you know, if you look at this by itself, it's fine. But if you start to look at a pattern, I'm very concerned about that, because we're not even in the densest parts of Morro Bay at this site. And, you know, the capacity to absorb these apparently anywhere now, from what we're being told, I'm very concerned there's not a planned aspect to it in terms of infrastructure. It's infrastructure like we look at highway intensity, or like we would look at safeguarding, taking care of the utility infrastructure. You know, we put easements over places that we need to repair and things like that. But, you know, the kind of RF shed around these pieces, I just remember the degree that the city went to try to find the co-location facilities away from the neighborhood specifically, so we didn't have to come up against these kinds of issues. So it seems like we've breached that with the demand of the people with the devices, but I'm concerned that we're really establishing a precedent here that any carrier can go any half block or less if they can prove the model is satisfactory. That's just a little scary to me.
Okay. The applicant has a comment. Would there be an objection to my reopening public comment for the purpose of hearing it, please? And then we'll reopen it for anyone else who wants to.
Greatly appreciated. And all these questions came up in 2008 with the Sprint facility. Everything that you're saying, and for anyone who was or was not here, we went into a long moratorium, as long as you could possibly go by law, and stopped and took a look, wrote an ordinance. And so you are right. You are correct in assuming that they're going to keep coming. And what the jurisdictions are able to do is decide how close they do want these to be to each other. Your ordinance doesn't state that now. And so you're going to get this. You're going to get, because they're going to pick the best facility that sort of works for them. I know there's an ordinance on the table. Cindy and I have talked about it over the years. It's wrapped in the general plan amendment, I think, or local coastal. It's in there. And so that's something that is in the works, I would say. I know getting something through the Coastal Commission is a long process, but I encourage you all to look at that language that is being proposed that does address a lot of this. It talks about distance from residential, distance from other facilities. And so it's something that has been grappled with. The questions you're asking have been on the table before. And so I think that's still a good vehicle for sort of their concerns, I guess, probably not open for discussion, but that was just something I didn't know if you knew, that we had sort of gone through this in 2008, and this is still questions that are being asked. And so a lot of the other jurisdictions that I work in, County of Ventura being one of them, and others, have ordinances that just have guidelines. So when a carrier comes, they have an ordinance that says, no, you can't. You can locate 3 miles from the other one, but not a half mile. And so the guidelines for the carriers, so that they already know what they can do. And so not to say that, you know, the city of Morro Bay is any less, but of course they're going to try to get, you know, a willing church and an area that they need for capacity for. And so all of those things line up, and they're allowed to. And so that's sort of where it differs. But I just know that there's language on the table to address those issues. It might be a long time in moving through the process, but this is not the first time that I've have had these questions being asked. So just wanted to sort of give a little backstory there.
if technically you can put a cell phone tower anywhere, I would suggest that they put it, you deny their application and have them reapply to put it somewhere else. Even maybe on the top of City Hall. Why shouldn't the city make the money?
Thank you.
This is, I think, the most recent part of the general plan that talks about wireless. And you do talk in here about the needs of residents, business owners, and visitors. You talk about well-designed. You talk about leasing of publicly owned properties where feasible. You talk about the use of existing facilities and co-location and encouraging the placement of antennas on existing structures. So there has been some work here, not enough, but some. And to just give you some history from 2008, because we were involved in that, your city council overturned on appeal the placement of the cell tower at St. Peter's Episcopal Church, and then you were sued by Sprint, and the city had to overturn its overturning of the appeal. So your city council at that time wanted to protect neighborhoods. And I think what we're asking you to do, and I appreciate Mr. Lucas's interest, is go a step farther before you look at this one and the next one next week and the next one next month and the next one 2 months from now and create some guidelines that help us and help you. Thank you.
I appreciate Betty Windholtz. I appreciate those speakers and the comments here, because I was on council when we did this, and we did get sued and we did have to overturn that. But it was my understanding that the writing that we did was sent on, or should have been sent on, to the Coastal Commission. And in my mind, there's no reason not to separate that out and send it on. I don't know why it wasn't sent on, and it needs to be sent on. You shouldn't wait for the whole general plan to be redone before you take this piece out and protect us in the neighborhoods. This, along with the next one, I think it's great that we, and like she mentioned, that there had been a moratorium. Maybe we can do another moratorium, since that there's been a gap of space. Maybe that's something we can do in order to get some good guidelines in place. I resent the fact that they want to violate our height limits. The next one coming up is on a 28-foot pole on a scenic highway with another big, you know, encasement of their equipment. And how does that fit, you know, with our guidelines for a scenic highway, let alone a chimney that may or may not violate the height limits in the neighborhood of 25 feet. So I think there's lots of room for you as the Planning Commission to set some standards, and I hope that you'll take the time to do that. I think it's really important.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to comment at this point? Okay. So we'll close public comment, bring it back to the commission. What's the status of the work that was done in 2008?
So it was a separate LCP amendment. It was submitted to the Coastal Commission, I believe, in 2012. We had some staffing changes in 2012. It came back from Coastal Commission. It was deemed incomplete. There was some staffing transition, but what I understand is that it was incomplete because it was not legally adequate, and it did not meet federal law. And so basically the whole thing needs to be redone. Since then, since about 13 or 14, I don't know if there's been additional work that Mr. Graham might have information that I don't have on.
A good portion of it has to be rewritten, so much so that it was kind of a start over type thing. We have a few moving parts of things that we're trying to get through Coastal now, and that's one of the ones that has to be rewritten and taken through the process. And at current, it's not based on one of the goals that we have right now, so it's on the list, and probably was going to be picked up as part of the general plan LCP update and moved forward. it certainly can be broken out and moved forward separately. It just probably would result in other things that we're doing right now being put to the side because we don't have the capacity at this point to probably pick it up and do it. We're right now working on secondary units. When we finish that, then we probably could have the ability to maybe move to back to the wireless. But we have a few things that are pending right now.
Is that something, Scott, that it would be easy or not difficult just to send the text as it was submitted to the Coastal Commission and the Coastal Commission's comments for our information, just to distribute them to the commission?
Yeah, I just need to go back and look through it. I haven't looked at it in a while.
I just think it would help us to prepare for dealing with it again. And I recognize one of the issues, of course, is this is 2016 almost. So I suspect the technology may be significantly different than it was in 2008 when this was put together in terms of the size of the towers and the strength of the transmitters and that sort of thing. But at least it's a place to start, a place to look at. Sure.
Scott, I understand that there is a new regulation coming out, AB-57 on cell phone towers. I don't know. I'm sure you don't have it at the tip of your fingers now, but that's supposed to be effective January 1st, 2016. And I'm just wondering if it makes more sense for the commission, and now I'm looking at my commission partners, to find out what's in that law and kind of take a short pause, defer this to a date uncertain until we can get more information really about AB 57 and where the committee would like to, the commission would like to take the whole issue of cell phone towers.
Yeah, I wasn't even suggesting agendizing it. I was just suggesting if it's not inconvenient to send that out as an information item.
Yeah, I understand. And AB 57, really what it does is reduce turnaround time requirements and puts in triggers where applications, if they're not acted on within a certain amount of time, they're deemed approved. And falls right back to the we don't get to regulate the or weigh in on the RF factors and these things. So not doing that, the federal government has said, hey, we're going to pass regulations that make you process them faster. There's differing regulations for different types of facilities. There's reduced times for co-location facilities. There's reduced times for modifications to existing towers that are minor. There's different times for modifications that are considered more major, I guess, and then differing times for new facilities. So there's four or five triggers in it, and it's something we're looking at right now. In fact, I just recently got a memo from the city attorney's office on it, really suggesting that we alter our application forms to account for that, so the carriers are coming in with their applications and identifying which track they think they're on, so that we're meeting the timeline, so something doesn't slip through the cracks and automatically be approved without proper review. Now, that being said, they're also moving to have, and they have been for a couple of years, moving to have these approved ministerially over the counter at the building counter. So that's been rolling around out there for a while, and they've made several attempts at it. So.
Thank you.
Well, I appreciate the applicant's candor, because I do think that I don't believe people monitor everything that happens here. But I do think if we had a situation where we're starting to say we are going to absorb a certain number of co-locations, overlapping service areas and things like that, people would be extremely concerned about it. I would be happy to continue this until we had more information about things, but I'm very concerned about this because we only have we had a neighbor to the south, a neighbor to the west, and then neighbors to the northwest concerned about this location. And I'm concerned any time whether we're going to have this kind of overlap of zones, we're going to start seeing more and more people come forward. And our job is to speak for the community And if the community isn't represented by the ordinances properly, I'd say let's get the ordinance right. I don't want to stop cell phone service, but it doesn't appear that we're stopping any service at this point. We're just talking about where the best place to put these are, which might be more than a block away from each other. That's all I'm concerned about.
It appears we need better tools in our toolbox here with this. I doubt that if we went to the community and said, you know, you got property rights, you could put a cell thing on your house, and then a half a block away you have another one, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, because at the end of the day, it's like, you know, we have ordinance for garden sheds, you know what I mean, and addressing people's, you know, concerns there. This is something that emanates past that, and I think that we need as a community looking at holistically, we need to look at it and say, how is this going to come together? Looking at it like these one-offs is not good governance, I don't think.
So the issue that you face this evening is there is nothing that you can change in our ordinances that would affect this project. This project is deemed complete. That means it's subject to the policies that are in place right now. So you wouldn't be able to hold them to some other standard because it's not in place. This application was deemed complete, so they're vested in the policies and standards that are in place today. Not discounting your concerns and not discounting this as maybe something worth looking at, but understand that. And so are the applications that you have coming before you at the next meeting. Same thing. Those are applications for facilities, you know, that are – those applications have been deemed complete, so they are vested in the rights associated with our current standards.
I think what we're saying is we wish we had better ordinances, but we don't. In other words, I guess the question is if you want to deny it, the question is we're denying it on the basis – of the fact that it's inconsistent with what rule?
That's exactly the issue.
I honestly think it's even a bigger issue because, you know, we're kind of looking at only one side. We're kind of looking at only one side, which is the side of those people who live in the vicinity of the tower. We're not looking at the user side. In other words, I think we have to consider it carefully enough that we don't get into a situation where if you live in this block and you don't have a landline, which more and more people don't have, and you have an emergency, you'd better have Sprint, because if you have something other than Sprint, you're not going to get through to the police department. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's a big issue to tackle when you look at all sides of it.
I guess my concern is across the street on the apartment, they decide to go for a conditional use permit and for carrier C, and then the corner property goes up to 20% of allowable, and then the people across the street go for provider D, and it goes up to 50% of the allowable, and so we've got four cell towers within a block of each other, and there's nothing, right. You're saying there's nothing to stop that at this point, and I'm saying I think we ought to stop that.
Right.
Because no. I don't see where this is just the tip of the iceberg in terms of locational capability, because we don't have something articulate, and that's a community value that transcends the safety of the technical, you know, theorem that's in place.
No, I agree, Michael. I absolutely agree. But I also think that access to the telecommunication system is a community value too, and I think we have to find a way to balance the two. And without making it carrier specific. In other words, we can't say we're an AT&T town or we're a Verizon town or whatever. You know what I'm saying? And I just see that as part of the process that we need to go through.
I also think, to Michael's point, that if carrier A, B, and C came in, at that point in time, we would be able to deny for visual clutter. I mean, there is a lot we could do. I think that there are so many different carriers, and they can't always co-locate is very troubling.
If I could add a comment, I would just say that keep in mind that as our ordinance stands today, a conditional use permit that's approved by the Planning Commission is required for any new facility. So application 3, application 4, you still have that approval authority as of today.
But if we're debating whether to approve this one, it seems like we're constantly saying, well, we're below the threshold. So we're below the threshold till somebody gets to 99%. That's my concern. We could have so much consumer demand. I just don't think the people of the town are aware that the demand has caught up. It's kind of like if we had gun sales. I know by law we sell weapons, but you want one every block. Do you want a liquor store on every block? Do we want a bar on every block? And I know there's you have hearings over that, and it's not based on the ability to police. It's based on community values. And here we have members of the community being placed in a situation where there's 8, 10, 12 people there that, as far as they know, perhaps their memory goes back, perhaps they were here in 08. Perhaps they don't know there's a cell tower in St. Peter's there, and I don't know, I'm not a real estate person. I don't know if these things are disclosable in sales anymore or not. There's a concern about the nature of, was this going to impact the sales value of houses? And if all of a sudden you have to disclose on a sales agreement that you're within half a block of two cell phone towers, that potentially could be an issue as well. It could impact sales. Because it's not so much that I don't have any problem with the church having a cell tower. I think they've gone out of their way to try to mitigate the impact on the community. The problem to me is that their job is not to be concerned about what's happening in the neighborhood with other vendors or things like that. So my concern is that's where we have to come in and say, do we want this kind of saturation of infrastructure, even though it appears it's going to be at a safe level.
We're kind of getting into a general discussion, I guess, but that's okay. I guess the question, Michael, is then what are we concerned about with the increased saturation of cell towers? What are we concerned about? Visual blight? Are we concerned about, I don't know, are we concerned about the visual aspect of it? Are we concerned about blocking views? Are we concerned, what is our concern with the increased density?
Like I said, I'm concerned about the long-term concurrent loading of all the types of RF in the area. I don't know if we don't have any long-term studies about these things, and they're instantaneous readings. But I'm just concerned that as a community, if we went to the public and said, we're going to start, we have no concern about how far apart these are, then half a block is meaningless. It could be next door. It could be every property next to you in a block. And we're saying we don't have any problem with that.
Unless it, eventually it would no longer be compliant with standards, right?
Well, I don't know. I'm concerned that even if it is compliant with standards, people would still be concerned.
I'm also concerned with the visual blight. And I do know we don't have a view protection ordinances, but certainly, you know, these towers on every street corner basically really will change the complexion of the area and the city.
Yeah, I think this is a very complicated issue that we're not going to solve tonight. I think we've laid some groundwork for a thought, but I would bring us back to this application and see what we want to do about it.
Well, even if we would move from here and put something together in a future agenda item, doesn't this count as a precedent that trumps anything we'd put in the ordinance?
No. It would just be existing. It's a conditional use permit, and by the nature of it, it stands on its own. So your approval relates to the circumstances that surround the project. It's what the conditional use permit process is meant to address. It would be permitted by right, and you'd be doing some sort of other permitting process, but conditional use permit means you're going to add conditions to it to make it fit the site where it's located. And so just by its nature, it's not precedent setting.
Yeah, but it's an example. Like somebody else can come in and say, well, you know, this guy's got it half a quarter block away. Why can't I have it a quarter block away?
If it would be inconsistent with the future ordinance, it would become nonconforming. Like the houses that are built with inadequate setbacks, okay. they just become nonconforming.
Okay, I'm going to throw something out. Maybe something. Can't we have a request from the city council to take a look at this issue a little bit more, like, urgent? Because this is kind of...
So the Planning Commission, you know, with majority of you agreeing, could send a letter to the city council requesting them to do something. I'm not going to tell you what that should be, because there's many things that you could request that they do. We could request that they, you know, start looking at this immediately because you have concerns, because this is the new technology that's coming out. And our understanding, based on discussions this evening and in past meetings, is that we're going to get more of these things, and we're concerned about how close the clusters are of them. And we think that's an immediate concern and one we should, you know, take immediate action on or what have you. That could take the form of an initial moratorium. That could take the form of council giving us direction to start working on an ordinance. It could take the form of them saying, no, we're not concerned about it. I'm not going to guess as to what they might do, but that would have to, if the commission wanted to do that, you can, but it needs to be a majority of you agreeing to what that is and moving it forward. So you could do something along those lines and draft a letter and then agree at the next meeting to forward it to the council if you want it.
My concern is that this venue is too limited to talk about the ramifications of what we're talking about tonight, and that those people who got identified about the meeting were thinking about an isolated cell tower on the church. And my concern is that the other people in that area aren't aware of the location of the second tower. Maybe, maybe not. My guess is not. I might be wrong. But I would rather take the safe side and not establish a precedent in terms of location of these things so close together, because of community input, not because of the safety aspect, because of the community feeling for how these would be too close together. And I think it's worth having a larger discussion about that issue, not the cell tower on this church. So I would advocate sending a letter to council asking for direction based on the number of applications coming, pending, probable, based on the number of providers, and that the situation is likely to be repeated. Potentially repeated. And that we have no current mechanism to deny it in the ordinance. I hate to kick things up to them because it's our job, but there's only four of us.
Yeah, I hate to sort of, I wouldn't want to appear to be trying to take away their prerogative to set priorities. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if we do it, I think it should be in the form of, this is a concern for this. We feel it should be addressed. Please put it on your radar, kind of thing.
It's not something I'm going to write for you. The plan, if you want to do that, it's completely acceptable to do that. And I will absolutely, if you would agree as a majority, three of you at least, to forward that, and you decide to draft it, then you can do that and adopt it at the next meeting. I'll agendize it for you, and we'll take it through that process. Happy to do it. Doesn't have anything to do with this application. You need to make an action tonight. So that action is either approve, deny, or continue. So those are your options. You one way or the other, I mean, you need to make a decision this evening.
And I suggest we address that and come back to this under the new business topic, and then we can decide where we should go with the larger issue.
Well, I would advocate we continue.
I would advocate we continue as well.
Well, continue until when? Continue until what happens?
Whatever comes back with the city council.
See, the thing is, it's they're the elected officials. If we're putting in a cell tower every quarter block, the community's got to be aware of this. And right now, I don't think that the community has a good feel of that. Because that's kind of, I mean, I understand the conditional permit, but it is still, it is what it is. It's
You can't continue the project indefinitely.
Right. I understand that, but at least get them talking about it, and maybe they can get and feel that there's a priority that needs to be here, because this is what's coming up in front of us, and we don't really have the, I mean, if we could just say, well, FCC says it's okay, you know, I mean, why even come to us? FCC says it's good, and it goes through the zone, so we're good, right?
Right, but I honestly feel that you're really that you're really suggesting a denial. Because again, we can't just continue this and leave it hanging for a prolonged period of time. I don't think that's fair to the community or the applicant.
I actually am not. Depending if the more of a community input, but I would like to see, I'm not saying denial. I would like to see that chimney closer so it doesn't obstruct anybody's view, because I think that with these particular projects, we could get creative, just like you could get with architecture, to camouflage and to hide these things, and they've done a good job with that. I'm just thinking we need to have people know what's going on, and I don't want to get into discussion about the science of RF, but, you know, at least let people know, you know, what they're being exposed to.
But this was noticed for 500 feet, right?
Yes.
And all this material was online?
Correct.
Twice, yeah, two different meetings, correct? So, I mean, we've done our outreach.
Well, the outreach was about a cell tower on the church, not about locations within a block of each other. That material didn't come out till today, right?
It's in the staff report.
The St. Peter's, because of the RF mm-hmm. study?
Well, it's identified in the staff report under the background section that there is an existing RF facility a block away, and that and it was also addressed that we asked for a revised RF report that would be distributed to you today. Typically, when we do the noticing, we try to have a general enough description of the project so that people at home don't form a conclusion about what will be discussed, that they don't come to the meeting. We want people to come to the meeting. We want people to call us. So that's why project descriptions are worded the way they are. If you've ever wondered the content of that paragraph, there is a method behind the madness. And for what it's worth, I did take about 6 to 8 phone calls of various neighbors asking questions, emailing, met with, I think, at least 2, maybe a third person at the counter. So it did generate a lot of interest. On 800 Quintana, nobody called me. So just for purposes of disclosure there.
Well, I think if we wrote a letter to the council by our second meeting in January, we'd have some kind of response, I would think. It would be approved the second meeting in... If we drafted something, it would be approved our second meeting in December, and then it would go on to the council for their first meeting in January. They trail us? Are they ahead of us? They ahead of us or are they trail us? I forget. We're first and second.
You're first and third, and they're second and fourth.
They're second and fourth. So if we had the third, fourth, do they have a fourth Tuesday in December? Are they meeting?
They're not meeting.
So it would go to the second Tuesday in January for them to see, to react to what we said. And then they would that be time for them to put something in the record for our agenda for the third Tuesday in January? Our second meeting in January?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
So we'd be talking first or second meeting in February.
I mean, we have a problem with that.
But I guess I'm confused. Are we asking them to give us specific criteria? Or what are we asking them to give us that's going to help us make a decision on this project?
That right now the citizens have no input on the proximity of RF towers. In terms of adjacency, it's only at the discretion of the safety of the ordinance of the federal directives, which could mean that it's within lots of each other.
So are we asking them to give us guidance on how close they should be or shouldn't be?
I would imagine that would be something we'd want to see. Because it's a community value of how close do we want to have these together.
But it wouldn't affect this application.
It wouldn't. No. You're right.
If we continued it, why wouldn't it?
Because it was...
It was deemed complete under the policies that are in place today. The zoning code as it sits today is what this project is subject to. You don't get to change the rules once their application is deemed complete. And then there's reasons behind that, right? You know, they've expended a considerable amount of effort and money towards the application. And so that's why we have deemed complete dates. It locks those things in so we can't change the playing field for the applicants, you know, once we're in play, I guess, is the...
Scott, how
underway?
Many of these are deemed complete at this point in time? We have the 2 tonight, and then...
I'm not sure either. I mean, I know we have at least... Yeah, we have at least the other one on the meeting, on tonight's meeting. We have one proposed for the next meeting.
And there's the potential for the other Main Street one. I think it, yeah, maybe.
So you're thinking 4 to 5. I mean, including this one.
Four.
Four would be.
I don't think we have any other ones in play, do we?
No.
Plus this one, so four. I'm sorry, what?
We just had one last week.
And we just had one.
Yeah.
So it's a different issue. It's a separate issue. We go back to the fact that it's a separate issue. Yeah.
I suggest we vote on this.
I think we should deal with what's on the table, and then we can come back to it under new business and decide what we need from council, because there's nothing that can happen in that process that would be relevant here. So do we have a motion to either approve or deny this project? Okay.
I move that we deny this project based on the proximity of an existing tower and visual light.
Do we have a second?
Second.
So we have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on the motion? Well, then let's have a roll call. So just to be clear, voting yes is a vote to deny. It's kind of the opposite of normal. Just make sure that we're on the same page here.
And we'll also have to bring back a resolution reflective of this.
Correct.
At which point, I'll be discussing that with the city attorney to see if it's actually possible.
Okay.
Commissioner Lucas.
Aye.
Commissioner Sadowski.
Aye.
Commissioner Sorensen.
Aye.
Chairperson Teft.
No.
Motion to deny passes.
3-1.
Thanks.
Okay. So we will we'll need to put the resolution on the agenda for the next meeting. Is that it'll be a consent item, or
I'm sorry, it would be a consent item that I bring back. It's just that resolution wasn't in front of you for denial.
Correct.
So we have to bring it back.
Okay. So moving on to agenda item B2, Coastal Development and Coastal Use Permit CP0-483 and UP0-421, located at 1401 Quintana Road. And Joan is the planner, but I have a feeling that...
I'll take it.
Okay.
I think some confusion internally when we started changing hearing dates. And on this item, we failed to post the site, which is a requirement of the city's zoning ordinance. And so we need to continue this to the next meeting. So the recommendation would be to continue to December 15th.
But this is a public hearing item.
Yep.
And therefore, we will start out by asking if there's been any ex parte communications to report.
Yeah.
None. Seeing none, we will open this up for public comment, giving the applicant or applicant's representative first shot if they would like to take it.
So knowing Tricia Knight with Verizon Wireless, just knowing that this is going to be coming back before you in a week or so, and that we're opening up this dialogue, the reason I brought up that 2008 sort of way that it went about is I was part of every step of that. It went on for almost 2 years. And so the vehicle for which we have in front of us right now is your current ordinance. That's all the applicant has. We are allowed in these places no matter what's in front of you. There's nothing saying that we can't. There's no rules against proximity. Those are things that as you write your letter to the council and they open up that dialogue with you and you move that ordinance through, that you can make very specific guidelines. And so I'm just encouraging you not to handicap the applicant right now with trying to regulate. Your ordinance doesn't allow for it. And so we're only going by with what's right in front of us. And so it ends up in loss. It's just stuff I don't want to go there. You know, we have the vehicle. I encourage you. We're willing to work with you. Cindy and I have met before talking about this sort of legality of this and how it conflicts and sort of giving her the laws that are updated and things like that. So we're working with the city to try to get that through. But as it stands now, we're just working within that framework that we've been given. And so denying things based on proximity, there's not one word about proximity in your ordinance at all. And so I'm just, you know, making that clear. And so when these are coming before you, you know, we're working with the community to the best of our ability. This has been noticed twice. I worked with Mr. Hopper, not this project, but anyway, so that's all I wanted to say is that we're working within that framework. And I hope City Council does open up that dialogue about the ordinance amendment because that's going to be your vehicle. So that's all I had to say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any additional public comment? Seeing none, we will close that and bring it back to staff. Is there any discussion on this item, or is there a motion to continue?
Move to continue this item until, do you have a date certain?
It's the next meeting, which is the
next meeting.
Okay. I'll second.
We have a motion, a second. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 4-0. Unfinished business, we have none on our agenda. New business, gee, is there anything that anyone would like to bring up?
Well, I would like to propose having a discussion about the community values of proximity of cell towers to each other and having a some ability to identify graphically where these existing facilities are and what's been approved to date and what has been deemed by staff as complete to date, because I think we'll start to see a pattern that I think should have some community input, whether that should continue or not.
I have no doubt that we need these towers and that the need for these towers will just be growing over the next several years, but I think it behooves us to take a really careful look at it and, first of all, to educate ourselves where we have them and then what's the science behind it. And I'm not talking about the RDF, and I'm talking more about, okay, what if we're going to do it, are we going to say that they have to be co-located and that we have something a little bit larger, but we can still make it discreet, but we have one of those instead of three? And I think those are really important things that I think we need to look at. You know, certainly a one, you know, up on a hill or next to the freeway, you know, they're a lot less visual than when they're in everybody's view path or right, you know, next door to you or within a block and a half. You have two or three. And, I mean, you know, there's how many carriers, four or five carriers that possibly may want to come into an area. So I think that's important.
I think Number one, I think we have a very, very, very small sample of the community here tonight. We had three people. There were probably 500 homes noticed within that 500-foot radius. 300 homes, I don't know. But we have a very small sample of the community. And so I have to say I don't know what the level of concern is in the community at this point. I don't have anything in front of me to tell me that. Perhaps if this is agendized before the city council, there'll be more of an indication.
I just think the noticing was for a single tower. If most people understand we can't stop a single cell phone tower, you'd have to actually get into it to see that there was the close location at St. Peter's. And I bet most of the community didn't bother to go that deep into it to see it. And if they did, that's fine. Then I'm wrong. And that's fine. But if it isn't right, we better know, because we're going to get a lot more of these. And I think there's a huge breach between going to the city locations, the tower locations, and starting to put them in the residential zones. I don't think most people are aware that that's been breached.
But if, I think it's also careful to define what we mean by them, because my understanding is that these are fundamentally different than the large towers that are out on the vicinity of town. So we're not talking about the same thing at all.
No, that's why if I don't get one, I'll probably make one. I'll try to find some way that we're showing these things with what their intensity is. We go to the trouble of making sure the lights on the harbor create a night sky that's attractive, I'm totally behind having cell coverage in here. I want us to have good cell coverage, but I think this is problematic for some of our citizens, and it's not in my neighborhood yet, but it might be.
I guess I just feel like we're not speaking plainly, and it sounds to me, I realize you expressed a concern about visual clutter, but it sounds to me we're talking about RF, and I don't know that we have a basis to do that.
I think there are community values here. Like I said, we could have a gas station every 20 feet. We could have a liquor store every 20 feet. But we say we want certain places those are at and certain places they aren't. We don't want one in a residential neighborhood. We may not want one in certain commercial neighborhoods.
But we have a basis for that. And it's aesthetics. It's community character.
Yeah.
And so what's our basis here for saying we don't want one every half block or whatever?
I don't think it's science, it's stigma.
Well, is stigma a valid planning tool? Yeah, I mean, let's say that people said, you know, I don't want any black people in this town. Community said that.
I'd say it's more like, do we want to encourage overhead utilities versus undergrounding them?
That's,
you know, we do it in a certain way.
That's aesthetic.
Because, yeah, but it's also there's a nature of seeing the transformers and the hearing the hum and things like that. It concerns me when I see these diagrams with areas where people aren't allowed to be on the outsides of buildings without turning these things off. You know, the one on Quintana, you know, we still don't know what the ratings are for certain exposed areas of the building that we looked at or asked for. And I think we can accept something scientifically without accepting it in terms of
comfort in the community. And it's not a racial thing. I think that's a bad analogy, Dr. Tao.
Well, but it's obviously not racial, but what I'm trying to say is that is an illogical reaction an appropriate basis for legislation?
I don't think it's illogical to have parameters. Okay, we have parameters on everything else, and all we're saying here is, you know, here we have a community that has two cell towers within a quarter block. Okay, now if that, you know, one of the things that I learned is that the signals are weaker. Oh, okay, so maybe the lot of small ones is better than a couple big ones. But this is all part of community involvement. And that's why I think that it needs to be brought up, because, you know, things are subjective. It's like having a street light every 20 feet or a street light every, you know, 50 feet. And same thing with these. Not necessarily inherently bad. It's just that, you know, there seems to be a lack of just a lack of good governance. You know, it's part of good governance having some parameters. Like if you said, okay, if we had a parameter, you could be within a half a block, this would be a no-brainer. Boom, you're going to do that, maybe move the chimney, it's okay. But if, like, the community says, you know what, there's no reason why we should have these things within, you know, a block of each other, then this is the kind of stuff that needs to have, there needs to be dialogue over this. And these are emerging issues, and I understand that, you know, what you're saying, I do. I understand you got your, you don't want to be changing the goalposts in the middle of the game. That's not right to the applicant, and that applicant is solid. I believe her. But the thing is, it's still, I think it needs to rise up to a higher level of awareness in the community. And if that means bringing a letter to the city council, have it discussed, have it out there, and then have it come back. It's not that at least you have the dialogue, you know, about it.
I truly feel that there's two issues here, and I think you're right. We were, you know, certainly on, you know, the RU, you know, we're kind of dancing around it a little bit. But to me, and almost as important, or maybe even more, is the visual clutter. If we're going to have faux chimneys, fake trees, or whatever else, every couple of blocks, that's going to really affect the nature of the community. And, you know, I think we're all kind of know that, okay, we're going to be bombarded with things, you know, every time we go into a hospital, every time we go anywhere. But we can control, you know, the visual aspects of it, and I don't think we have the tools right now to do it well. And I think that direction from the city council would be helpful.
So, well, I think that's a very important distinction, because the solutions are very different. I mean, what you're talking about there is co-location. You're talking about minimizing the visual appearance of it, and that's a whole different solution. You know, all I'm saying, and to me that's very important, because what you're doing is you're saying we need to regulate in order to prevent some harm, okay? And you've defined what the harm is, which is visual blight, okay? And that I can get my head around. But when we talk about simply limiting the number or changing the distance, as you know, limiting the number or changing the distance might be part of addressing visual blight. But when we talk about that as a standalone, I don't understand what the negative impact is that we're trying to mitigate.
The commission has full authority with a conditional use permit to have the thing look like whatever you want. Right. I mean, literally, once this, if this facility were to be put in, the majority of the folks aren't going to know it's there because it's in something that looks like a chimney. And it's going to have its equipment screen, so you won't be able to see it. So you won't know it. So if you move into this thing a day after it's built, you're never going to know it's there. And so the point being behind that is you as the commission and through the conditional use permit process have a broad range of discretionary authority to say that chimney doesn't look like it belongs on the building. So you need to come up with something else. And some of the other solutions that you see are things that look like parapets and things like that. That's a screening mechanism. You would never know it's there. I don't know how you make a visual blight finding with something like that.
But I disagree, Scott. Yes, it's going to look like a chimney. And if I moved in, I would see a chimney. But I don't need to see 15 chimneys within a circumference around my home or anybody else's home. Yes, you know, every house can have a chimney or two chimneys or whatever, but when you have them, I understand what you're trying to say, but I'm talking about scale and mass. And I'm not talking about how large they are, but how many there will be. And it could be that eventually, I mean, you're going to affect the nature of the community by having so many of them. And I think that we just need to sit back and say, how many is reasonable? And how do we make sure they have the least amount of impact on the community?
And, yeah, and see that I can get my head around to an extent because I can say, okay, this is what we're trying to fix, okay? Otherwise, I don't know what we're trying to fix.
I think there's communities, as our applicant noted, that have fixed it by distance. And I'd like to know
what they've used as
locational distance between this infrastructure.
No, what's the problem that they fixed?
I think that people don't want to live next to a cell tower.
Or maybe the compounding, the accumulative impacts, okay? Maybe that has something to do with it. Now we're going back into the science. If we just blindly believe that the RF, the numbers in the feds are, it's all good, then yeah, there is nothing to fix. Everything's good. However, looking back for us, I think as a commission, we got to look at it as a community thing. It's not just blindly believing that everything else. It's like, if there's concerns there that we have 3, 4, 5 cell towers right around each other and you're living in the middle of it and, you know, they're saying, oh, it's not a problem. I mean, at least let people know that this infrastructure exists. Right now, you don't even know the infrastructure exists.
We should probably really narrow this discussion. This is not an agendized item. I'm starting to get a little nervous.
Yeah, it's true.
You can have direction now. So you can come up with an idea that the letter thing we talked about, you don't want to do that. You want to place it on a future agenda. So we can have a discussion. Happy to do that. So you can have this discussion. You started really kind of getting into the working pieces of it.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be doing that. So at a minimum, I can put that on an agenda for the next time, and that'll be a new business item, and we can talk about it. You can decide that you want to do something with the letter. That could be a second item or a piece of that if you want. But those are discussions we should have now. Do you want to put it on a future agenda so you can have this discussion that you're having right now? Seems pretty valuable, actually. Do you want to agendize that letter concept to the council, or do you want to have that discussion, then generate a letter and forward it at a future meeting, if that's where you end up with, as a majority of you?
I would prefer to put it on the agenda and have a direct discussion on it.
Okay. And then you can make your decision if you want to do something more about it. Yeah.
I'm concerned if this is appealed or it comes back to us, if it's appealed to council will give us their sense from that. If it comes back to us, the council won't have been queried about it.
if we agendize it, we still we have a potentially broader audience because I think the issue is more focused than a single location study, which is what I think the problem was on this. So as long as we're moving it forward in a productive manner, I don't want to hold applications up, but I think we've got a problem that I want to figure out if it's a problem or not. It may only be my problem. Maybe Richard and I are the only ones that have a problem with it in Morro Bay, but I don't know. I'd sure like to know.
So do we have a consensus then to put it on as an agenda item for as a discussion item on a future agenda? And I don't think we can, I don't think we can do this officially, but with regard to a letter, if any members of the council would, if any members of the commission would like to bring back potential wording for a letter, we couldn't stop them, could we?
No, you certainly can. That's what I was saying. I mean, that may be something you want to do to forward it to the council. You know, as a representative action by the Planning Commission would be something you would have to move and have three of you agree that's what you
and
want
I
to do.
And I would not even be comfortable putting together a subcommittee at this point. Yeah. You know, I think that's an action. But if that happens, it happens.
It's certainly if you wanted to put together informational materials prior to that meeting that you wanted to give to me, I could distribute them to the rest of you folks. I'd be happy to do that. I will facilitate. I'm just not going to write a staff report or anything about it. I mean, this is a discussion for the Planning Commission to have. If future actions happen, that's when it goes into me doing a little more work on it. But
absolutely. The one thing I would go back to the request, I do think it would be valuable for us to be able to look at that 2008 ordinance and the Coastal Commission response to it. And that would.
And I was actually going to talk to Tricia a little bit maybe and see if there was some examples of some of the ordinances she talked about or the distances are. And I can, I can give you beforehand so you can take a look at it just for informational purposes.
And maybe for informational purposes, we could actually have a map of where we currently have cell towers.
They all have to show where they're at, and there's a website that shows them. I just don't remember what it is.
Mm-hmm. So for each company, though, I
think. Yeah.
One map, and they can be different colors.
There is now a place, one of the websites you can go on that shows where they're all at citywide because they have to be registered. I just don't remember where it's at, so it's going to take a little bit of work on my part.
Let me look into that.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about. I mean, I've seen it before because I've done it. I did it when I was working in Pismo. We had three carriers in the parking lot of City Hall.
I've seen that.
So. One of the things I looked at to see how many we had right there.
Yeah, I mean, I'll save it for when we have our. But that's next meeting.
Yes, so I was going to put it on the 15th. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Planning Commissioner comments. I personally commented out. Scott, do you have any comments to share with us?
I do.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I do have one. I did notice that on the bike park, there are mounds of dirt.
Oh, yeah.
So I want to just mention that because I do ask every third meeting what's going on. So apparently things are starting to move there.
So the grading of it is mostly complete. For the actual jumps in the course, that portion of it's mostly done. We have fencing that's coming. It was going to be that snow fencing that I think some folks didn't like too much. We've now cobbled together some money, and so we're probably going to have a split rail fence that goes around it, so it'll look much nicer. Should be happy about that. And the next piece they're working on is going to be the parking area, which is on the PG&E property, actually. And I think they're looking at getting a little more dirt to flatten that out and to put the ramp that goes down from that into the actual place where the jumps and stuff are. So they're getting there, and the idea is to be complete within a couple of weeks, I think. So that is exciting. They finally got it going and done, and so they're going to be doing landscaping over this weekend, I think. And they were asking us today about the potential to plant trees and things like that out there. So,
will we be having a grand opening?
We will be having something along those lines, yes. That is the idea.
Hopefully the trees are far enough from the course that people can't smack into them.
Well, that was the discussion that I was having when they brought it up. They're like, we have people that want, you know, some of the groups that want to donate trees. And I was like, in the middle of where you have the jumps, that seems...
I heard you're going to do a backwards flip for us, you know?
That sounds like a lot of fun, and I probably wouldn't be here for several meetings. That'd be great. I did have one thing for you guys this evening. We talked about it the last meeting. I couldn't remember when the Harbor Advisory Board was going to meet to discuss the boat haul facility. And so that's at their next meeting, which is on, Thursday at 6. So they'll be discussing, and they have the plans in it. I think the staff report is actually online on the agenda, so you could take a look at it and see what the options look like in the staff report. I believe it's posted now, so take a look at that.
Who got you mentioned something about the general plan consultant. Have you picked one, or do you only had one applicant?
Yeah, we only had we had one proposal that was submitted. In the beginning, there was a couple. It was going to be maybe three or four of them that we were going to get. Two of them combined, joined forces, and that's the one that we got. It was Michael Baker International, which is had acquired PMC within the last year. PMC was Pacific Municipal Consultants, and they're the ones that did the plan for the plan. So the good part about having them is they're in San Luis. They know us well. The sub-consultants they hired are RM. They know us well. They hired Rincon. They know us well. So they hired a lot of local consultants. So that part of it's nice. And we're going to, and the GPAC's going to, General Plan Advisory Committee is going to interview them, if I can get everybody to respond to the doodle poll that I sent out.
When did you send it?
A week ago. I resent it today.
I looked for it. I didn't get it.
I think you were the only one that responded.
Oh. I guess I did it automatically.
Yeah, I think you're the only one I got a response from. I have to go back and look at that now that you said that. But I resent it again today because I hadn't gotten responses back. And then I sent out another email on it about the availability of the proposals, too. So I have hard copies, and I'm putting it online for you guys, for the General Plan Advisory Committee anyway. So that's moving forward. I mean, that would answer your question. And the General Plan Advisory Committee is going to interview that one consultant. They're going to make a recommendation to the city council. And if they chose not to recommend it, then we'd be going back out with another RFP.
Oh. Have you personally got any experience with that? What's the general contractor's name?
It's Michael Baker International, but they acquired PMC, who's located in St. Louis, who was located in St. Louis. And so I'd had a lot of experience with PMC, and they've done a lot of work for the city. In fact, one of the first jobs that I had was working in the city of Atwater, and we hired PMC to do our general plan. Didn't make it all the way through there. Ended up moving from that job to Pismo before we completed it, but it was a good experience. And then, like I said, PMC's done a lot of different types of work for us over the years, so they're certainly more than capable, and they've worked on a lot of general plans, so they have a lot of experience. They do a great job. So I think the General Plan Advisory Committee's going to get a good opportunity to interview them along with their subs, and they'll get a full vetting, and they'll either decide to recommend a council or not. If they don't, then we'll have to go back out, and I'll have to kind of re-strategize how I do that, but certainly that's one option that could come out of this. So I don't have anything else.
Thank you very much. And with that, we will adjourn to our next regular meeting here at the Veterans Hall on December 15th. Thank you.